the introduction for item number four on the agenda over to Commissioner Thornburn.
So this is something I've really been looking forward to, and I have great pleasure in introducing a friend and colleague, Rick Perleberg. Rick is a teacher at Reardon High School, who I met when he received a very distinguished grant. He was a biology teacher at that time. And with this grant, he was able to expose many of his students to work in the natural resources field as well as bench research. I would imagine, has probably mentored many students toward natural resources. Rick truly has a passion for that. He's also an incredible teacher. I wish he'd been my biology teacher or FFA instructor in high school. I had an opportunity to see last year's debate team. Rick, for the past 2 years, has had his debate teams win the state and go on to nationals. So you have a real challenge, don't you? But I've already heard that you've been presenting, and I've heard that this is something that we're really looking forward to. Now, our responsibility, commissioners, is to ask really hard questions once we've heard the presentation. And then I would also like to note that Mayor Sherman Johnson, I believe, from Reardon is in the audience. We're going to be hearing more about Reardon. Reardon is a town in Lincoln County, just west of the Spokane County line, and it's well represented here today, and I guess the mayor may want to have some comments as well afterwards. So you're also, I don't know, Mayor, if you've heard this yet, but you may have some questions for the students as well. So Rick, I'll hand it over to you, and welcome.
Thank you, Kim. A little bit about the background of why we're here. The last couple of years, we've been trying to get in here, and Kim's right. We were disappointed that we couldn't present to you last year with the Upper Columbia salmon reintroduction presentation, which the kids ended up being a national semifinalist with, and we're very proud of them. Part of the success of our program, to be modest, isn't necessarily me. It's because I work really hard at recruiting good kids, and then I try even harder not to mess them up. This is just a continuation of an FFA contest that we take very seriously. The Agricultural Issues Forum is a contest that the students select a topic, hopefully particularly contentious, and then their job is to equitably represent both sides of the issue. We don't have an angle. We're not trying to change people's minds one way or the other. Their job is to simply provide representation on both sides of the issue and allow the audiences to make their own decisions. Now, each of the sides, the proponent and opponent, certainly have some pointed topics that are related to each of the components of the issue. But then again, we let the audience make the decision. This is our final presentation as part of developing a portfolio of public presentations, which is a scored part of the contest at the state level as well as the national level, and actually the portfolio is due tomorrow, so we've brought her right down to the wire. At the end of the presentation, we do ask that y'all ask them questions. They're looking forward to that, right, guys? Yeah, they look pretty excited. But that's what we need. We treat this contest very seriously, and then we would also ask that if the audience has questions as well, if we have the time to do that. And we are going to stay around for the public comment period about the Audubon purchase, the extension to that. It's actually an integral part of the presentation. So if there's no questions from the commissioners or the audience, I'm going to let the kids have this. The presentation lasts just about 15 minutes, and then at the end of that, we can ask, go for questions.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man, a dimension that is wide, a dimension of connected landscapes inhabited with wild creatures. This dimension was once as vast as space, and as timeless as within. These wild spaces are a middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. It is a dimension of predators. A dimension of connected core habitat. It is an area in which we call the wild. We take you now to 1968, in the Fisher Basin of Washington's North Cascade Mountain. Rocky Wilson and his wife were suddenly in for the evening, when Rocky caught sight of the biggest black bear they had ever put in his crossfire. A single shot rang out and echoed through the basin. In the waning light of that fall evening, the last grizzly bear fell in Washington. Rocky had no idea.
I really didn't.
He had killed Reed's most formidable predator. Just days later, President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed into existence the North Cascades National Park, thereby putting an end to hunting in the Fisher Basin.
Sorry.
Thanks, Rob Sterling, for showing us the way to the Twilight Zone. I mean, rewilding zone. Until recently, wolves and wolverines, like grizzlies, were but ghosts in the wilder past. Hunters, trappers, predator control programs, urbanization, and general fear of top predators left Washington's populations of these creatures clinging to existence are extirpated from our landscapes altogether. However, by the end of the 20th century, through a complex combination of social, ecological, and political changes, these apex predators began to re-inhabit areas of Washington.
Herein lies the issue. Do these once absent animals have a place in modern-day Washington state?
What will it take to effect social, political, and wildlife management change that accommodate for the connected habitats necessary to re-establish these populations?
Is Washington ready for wide-ranging predators like grizzly bears and wolves?
Is Washington ready for rewilding?
You walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but a future that might be. It is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has refinements, technological advances into a more sophisticated approach to the destruction or resurrection of ecosystems.
The Rewilding Institute in Albuquerque, New Mexico identifies that there are three main principles that drive the idea of rewilding. These key concepts summarize themselves in three main topics: cores, corridors, and carnivores.
All wildlife typically require large cores of protected landscape for feeding, seasonal migrations, and finding mates, as well as other needs. They justify bigness. These core areas of habitat are essential for the survival of all wildlife.
However, these core areas of habitat are simply not enough. All wildlife requires passage between these core habitats. Within Washington, these core reserves are typically not large enough. They must be linked to ensure long-term viability of wide-ranging species, predator, and prey alike.
And lastly, the most controversial of these concepts, carnivores. Their structure, resilience, and diversity of ecosystems is often maintained by top-down ecological interactions that are initiated by top predators. In short, the rewilding argument identifies that large predators are often instrumental in maintaining the integrity of ecosystems and in turn require a sense of space and connectivity.
Restore. Reconnect.
Rewild.
Proponents say yes, we are ready for rewilding. The reestablishment or reintroduction of top carnivores to ecosystems has ecological benefits.
Furthermore, land management practices can facilitate the connected corridors necessary for wildlands to harbor those fish and wildlife that once made them great.
And at last, political, management, and social movements have aided and will continue to assist the public in understanding and appreciating the importance of intact ecosystems.
We opponents, however, say no. Washington is not, nor will it ever be ready for rewilding.
Top carnivore reintroduction and reestablishment simply does more damage than it does good.
To add to the argument, simple geography and population patterns make rewilding all but impossible in Washington State.
And finally, the cooperation between the public, non-government, state, local, county, and federal organizations creates such a collaborative nightmare. The idea of rewilding truly does live only in the dreams of proponents.
Proponents will agree with most proponents that Washington State already has vast areas of land that has the potential to be managed for wildlife. In fact, of the 19.8 million acres of land that is already considered public, state and federal agencies manage for improvement, development, and restoration. This ground makes up nearly half of the total acreage of the entire state. Additionally, this acreage and its management are consistent with many of the best management practices necessary for all wildlife to flourish. But still, more work needs to be done in order to minimize conflicts, provide for multiple use, and develop measures that work well for human and wildlife alike.
Restore? We say, really? You want bigness? You've got it. Washington State's public lands are not shrinking. In fact, they are growing.
Right, Bailey. Recent trends of private party land acquisition and then subsequent sales of these lands back to state or federal agencies happen all the time. We have seen this in our own backyard at the Audubon Lakes Wildlife Refuge.
Agreed, Tanner. This land was once owned by a local community member. She leased this land to our retired ag teacher to graze his cattle. Her husband then passed away. She was ready to downsize and move on. Waiting with checkbook in hand was a group of conservation and environmentalists willing to pay the top dollar for the land. Once the final papers were signed, the lease went away, the fences came down, and the land was designated as a refuge. The groups then sold this land to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, with specific requirements that this land be used for waterfowl and wildlife alone.
Adding to restoration efforts in this manner causes a number of issues. First, it takes land that could be used for agriculture or domestic development out of use. Second, once these lands have been acquired and traded from private groups back to the states or feds, local levy tax income can be affected.
So, while more and more land might be turned into available habitat, the bigger picture is that the same land that is typically managed the same way for multiple use by private landowners is now bound up by government and policy for a single use.
Well said, opponents. I guess it's obvious that you're way over there on the right. Proponents say we need to reconnect. We understand, opponents, that we truly have a unique and diverse landscape in Washington, but in so much as it is unique and diverse, it is equally as fragmented.
Right, Gabby. Washington landscapes provide terrific habitat for a wide variety of wildlife, but that simply is not enough. In order to accommodate and enhance this diversity, we must facilitate connectivity, especially in a time where global climate change necessitates an organism's ability to move and adapt to an ever-changing landscape.
We seem to have forgotten that providing for a passage is a key element to the future success for all programs, sounding off that existing corridors are sufficient for emerging ecosystems and species that inhabit them is simply not accurate. So, opponents, it's like owning a really nice car, but not being able to drive it because you don't have the keys. There it sits, awesome in your metaphorical driveway, but it will never see the road.
Wow. Global climate change? Metaphorical driveways? Certainly makes a lot of sense why you're way over there on the left. Let us add some things that might just drive home our arguments.
You say reconnect, again. You say, really? Major efforts in connecting habitat and providing for passage is already a major focus for nearly all state, local, and federal agencies.
Already, the Washington Department of Transportation, in a major effort to provide connectivity, has implemented what they consider to be long-term vision to the success of wildlife being able to connect core areas of habitat with the needs of residents in Washington State and the Pacific Northwest are being simultaneously met with the I-90 Snoqualmie Pass East Project.
Right, Shay. This is an area that U.S. Forest Service biologists have long recognized as a critical connecting region for the north-south movement of wildlife in the Cascade Range. Washington State citizens and the United States Congress have already invested nearly $100 million in recent decades, acquiring and protecting nearly 100,000 acres of habitat to maintain and restore wildlife's ability to migrate within these landscapes.
So, proponents, don't tell us there's a problem when there isn't. Maybe the problem lies within your perception. Washington already does enough, and Tanner just gave you 100 million reasons why that's true.
Okay, Bailey, that's really clever. But let's move on to our final argument, the last of the three C's, carnivores. The simple fact is, whether you like them or not, we need carnivores. When carnivores are present, ecosystems thrive. A major example of this is a reintroduction of wolves in the Yellowstone National Park in 1995. Since then, numbers of plants and animals have increased noticeably. Surprisingly so, these organisms were all connected. Without the wolves, the elk overgrazed the valleys, which created a reduction in food resources, which in turn decreased the carrying capacity for those valley ecosystems. This decreased vegetation led to erosion of river and stream banks that affected water quality. This reduction left the streams open to the elements, creating severe fluctuations in stream temperature, which all add to the decline of trout in streams.
That may be true, Gabby. What about the problems that come hand in hand with wolves and other large predators being reintroduced in the wild?
The audience probably already knows that large predators are opportunistic feeders, and what's easier to kill than a defenseless calf or lamb? But what the audience may not know is that since Washington State has developed a wolf management plan, there has been a steady increase in large carnivore depredations. This positive sloping trend won't have a positive influence on producers' bottom line.
You opponents are right. Herd loss is unnecessary. However, it can be prevented. Carnivore and cow coexistence can be achieved with the help of non-lethal deterrents.
Perhaps a shift in paradigm is what is needed here. Ecosystems that have free-ranging, apex predators will require management for these predators. Perhaps it's just the cost of doing business nowadays.
Look, Sophia, how do you expect producers to make a profit when time and resources are going into these techniques instead of the herd? As local producer Craig Grew told us in an interview, when selling dollar calves, cattlemen aren't going to make a nickel.
With the implementation of non-lethal deterrents, these added costs will most certainly affect their bottom line. It's a simple equation. Added inputs equals added cost. Added cost equals lower profitability. Lower profitability equals ranchers struggling to make ends meet. So, if free-ranging apex predators is what you're looking for, understand this. It will be the expense of ranchers' bottom line.
We proponents of rewilding are not insensitive to the fact that added safeguards will be necessary for coexistence of predators and livestock initially. But if we look north, Alberta ranchers have already implemented strategies that offer shared habitat between wolves, grizzlies, and cattle with minimal depredations.
Right. Fact is, whether you're ready or not, opponents, apex predators are here. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently working on species reestablishment programs for grizzly bears in the North Cascades National Park, not to mention ongoing work with wolf management. So, Rocky, keep your finger on the trigger and let's see what happens. Really? Here's a fact for you, Soph. As more and more predators inhabit areas of Washington, more and more conflicts will occur. Whether it's livestock, pets, or humans remains to be seen, but I certainly don't want to be the one to find out. It sure is clear that there is much opposition to the idea of rewilding.
We opponents stand in opposition with a firm foundation.
We argue that land management practices are counterproductive to multiple use mentality, and that designating public land with expressed use policy continues to erode the fibers of what this country is founded on.
Additionally, these added corridors, while essential for all wildlife, already exist, and that state, local, and federal agencies already accommodate for those corridors through their own best management practices.
And finally, that large apex predator reestablishment program is a waste of precious resources, and that these animals pose an economic, management, and public safety issue when present in Washington's landscapes.
We proponents disagree. The development and designation of core habitat areas in Washington is essential to the health of ecosystems as well as all the wild creatures that inhabit them, predator and prey alike. Also, connecting those core areas of habitat is an important part to present and future programs for both private and public lands, and that in an era of environmental uncertainty, we must all be flexible and accommodating to these ever-changing conditions.
And at last, allowing reestablishment of apex predators to these ecosystems allows for top-down ecosystem self-management, and ultimately creates more sustainable and healthier populations of all wildlife.
You have just traveled into another dimension. A dimension of not only core habitats with connectivity, but one with apex predators. It was a journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That signpost up ahead, it reads, rewilding. Thank you.
Well, as a former dean, I would say you all have done excellent. I will turn it back to my colleague.
Well, I do have a question, but I would first ask if any of my fellow commissioners or director, deputy director, do you have a question for the... Yes, Jay. Commissioner.
Thank you. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
I get to work in this field every day. That's my job. And to watch you two groups portray this in the way that it's really happening in the world today was really amazing. You really hit it right on the head. I hope when you all reach our ages that some of these things have been figured out and solved. and you don't have another FFA group come from behind that says, or later that says, we still have the same problems. You know, I think that's what we're trying to do. So I'll ask a question. One more thing. I just want to say how you nailed this so well. I was sitting in awe because it was like, oh my gosh, are they going to say yep? Are they going to say yep? You covered every aspect of this from both sides. Very well done. My question to you is, a lot of the land that you're talking about on either side of this, whether it's connecting or core habitats or predators in particular, is publicly owned. A lot of that same land is used by those agricultural aspects of ranching and grazing livestock on public lands. And that's one of the key issues that keeps popping up from different organizations that are starting to say, well, should those livestock even be out there? And I know my answer to that, but I'd be curious to know what your answer is. Which deserves preference, the livestock or the predators that are coming back?
Just could the three of you on each side switch and argue and argue the other points as well? That's good. That's important, because the word compromise is a word that is underutilized in your generation right now, in the leader's generation right now. So being able to understand each other's side and switch places is a lesson that needs to be learned far and wide.
Other commissioners?
Yes. I'll ask a question. First off, terrific job. And we do hire people, so think about that in the future. But my question would be, do you believe that the federal government will reintroduce grizzly bears in Washington?
Yes, I mean, there's already all these efforts going on, and I feel like it's very possible. There's huge sides to both sides of the story, so it's hard to say which way it will go and which way will win, but I think it's very possible. I think history repeats itself, and we spent so much time as a state getting rid of these apex predators to make Washington our own. There's nothing saying that we'll reverse that and bring it back. So, that's where I stand.
I think no, personally, just because I feel like it's going to cost a lot of money. And just collaring wolves and the helicopter costs, Tanner, I feel like it's just going to be, it'll cost our state too much money. Personally, even though I'm on a proponent side, I just don't.
One more thing. And to my question, I was hoping maybe the answer might come from someone that both, that you know, livestock and predators can coexist together with some changes in the way management's done. I also want to just encourage you to keep following up on this. I know it was just for this segment and the work you're doing for the competition, but there are some really neat opportunities for young people in this field. I mean, this is it. This is compromising and finding solutions for some of the biggest problems in social tolerance for different species that are facing our state. A couple of references. One is the Washington Wildlife Habitat Connectivity Working Group. is a big effort that went in that would help show you some visual graphics of exactly what you were talking about. Maybe you've run across that. Another really neat effort going on in the state is called the Arid Lands Initiative. And if you look into that, there's some really cool stuff being done for wildlife. And it's all about, you know, trying to have grazing in particular work with a variety of focal species that people are concerned about. And they're finding some cool solutions. So I encourage you to keep looking into this.
So I want to echo that. It was just a terrific presentation. And it showed me that at least the seven of you have done either a lot of work or you intuitively understand these issues. And it might be both. So my question, I have two pieces of a question. Is this something that many people your age are concerned about? Because what the decisions that we're trying to make affect us, but they're going to more affect you. So is this something that, is the rewilding of Washington a concern of you and your peers for real, or did you pick this just for a subject? And then secondly, our agency spends a lot of money trying to get to this compromise, trying to figure out how to have room on at least public lands for everybody. A lot of that involves helicopters and collars and people. And my question is if that's really rewilding. And if it isn't, what is?
So for the first question, I would say that a lot of people our age aren't like really, they don't know a lot about the subject because it's not something, like it's not like an English class that you just get to take. And so a lot of people aren't educated about it because they just haven't learned about it. It's a lot to take in and everything. So people aren't like trying to teach people this subject and everything. So for that, I would say no. A lot of people our age aren't, but I think it's a good thing to know. And it's good to know like both sides of it.
And I would like you just said about the first part is like, having apex predators in our ecosystems had crossed my mind before. I live out in the country and I have cattle. That's crossed my mind, but it never really was to me until this became our topic and I learned more about it, and then now it's way more important to me as than it was before, but I don't feel like a lot of people my age understand it or even care just because we haven't been involved in it as much as we have in the past few months. But yeah, that's my take on that. I think it would be really cool to somehow find a way to educate people our age about it because it is important no matter what side of the fence you're on.
Do you have AP Environmental Science in your high school?
It's called
Early. Every 4.
But are there APs? No. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Thanks for coming. I really enjoyed it. This is Commissioner. Smith and I, Chair Smith, do something similar to this at the University of Washington with their fisheries program. They take up issues that are contentious. So this is something. So this is kind of, just so you know, kind of a what you can expect if you want to do it, can continue to do this kind of stuff in college. And so as a personal question, maybe not personal, but are you guys seniors, juniors, or what's the, is it a mix? A mix? Okay. Yeah. So, well, enjoy your high school years. So I have a question, I guess, for the proponents of wilding or rewilding. So if you, last month, the commission got a presentation of the most recent wolf census, if you will. And we continue to see a building of the wolf populations here in the northeast part of the state. And there are people here in this part of the state that would like some relief and are saying, well, why don't we move some of our wolf populations to areas in the state that have yet to have them reappear. So I guess my question to the proponents of rewilding is, let's say you were to go to some of the local communities in the part of the state where they don't have wolves yet. What's your pitch to those folks, and why should they support or not oppose introduction of wolves into their areas?
So, like, part of our argument is that they're beneficial to ecosystems. Predators are beneficial, like, they help out the ecosystems. It's all a chain reaction. So having them there would, like, I guess, enhance the whole ecosystem and have it be, like, a working ecosystem.
Okay. And so my, if I'm, let me just, if I may continue on, I'm say, well, that's all well and good for everybody else. What about me? I don't want my livestock at risk. Well, what's your response to that argument?
Well, in our presentation, we said that maybe it's just the cost of doing business nowadays, which means, like, to have these, we're going to have to build around them to protect our cattle with the non-lethal deterrents. To keep them away, have range riders out, pretty much shooing them away from your property to protect your cattle and whatnot.
We didn't get your name, so could you go down and give us your names, please?
I'm Sophia Weinkube, I'm a senior. Gavin Lee, I'm a junior.
Caleb Cole, I'm a junior.
Gavin Day, I'm a senior.
Bailey Lyle, I'm a senior.
Shay Junior.
Tanner Perry, junior.
And most of you have plans in the next year or two? So I'm going to put on my old dean and professor hat one last time here. That be careful, be wary of people that will tell you they alone know the answer. Because it will always be the wrong answer. So there is, in all of these issues, as you've done well on, they're very complicated, so there's no easy answer to anything. Also, think big. Never, you guys can be whatever you want to be. I mean, that's, and think about the future when you're doing that. You know, in the area of sciences, there's all sorts of opportunities, and the world needs people like you, whether it's in ag issues or environmental issues, forestry issues. There's lots of positions in those areas. In this state, we're blessed with a lot of colleges and universities that have excellent programs in all of those areas, so they're right around you. So you've made yourself proud today. Continue to make yourself proud into the future. And I, on behalf of all of my commissioners, I thank you. Thank you, sir. You're an outstanding educator, worthy of all accolades that you have and are yet to receive. Yes.
In the Soton, they have a debate team that I've also gone down and when they were talking about resource issues. And I'm going to ask you guys to tone it back a little bit because Soton isn't going to, you guys said an awful lot. So if you keep this up, you're going to run some real competition for our kids. So, no, you did an amazing job.
Thank you again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to thank the commission for the opportunity to address you. First off, I'm going to thank the students of Reardon High School and Rick, who's been a friend for many years, for the presentation. It's an excellent job, and I applaud them. Watchable wildlife.